is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
There are certain players that play their game differently from everyone else. And last night, obviously, we had a chance to watch one of them in Caitlin Clark. She was phenomenal. And just what she does for her sport to elevate it. And it helps that she's playing some really talented people on the other side. And that LSU rivalry made it even a little bit cooler. And we'll see what happens as she takes on the legendary program at UConn this Friday as well. And if they win there, then on to South Carolina, most likely. It is going to be a gauntlet for her to get all the way to win a championship this year. But while that was going on, or certainly afterwards, you had a chance to watch Julio, who is another person who plays the game a little bit differently from most of the people around him. And he had quite the night last night. I mean, he was all over the place. I want to talk through kind of what he did and what all of it looked like. But I will say that when I watch Julio, I am consistently reminded that I've never seen another player in baseball engage with the crowd and the fans the way he does. Mm-hmm. I said it last year, really kind of jumped out to me, but I noticed it again last night. He made those two phenomenal catches. We can talk through the other one that he didn't get, but he had the one crashing into the wall. And the moment he did, his first thought is to look at the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a baseball player do that.
He's kind of a showman in that way, right? I'm thinking of the late great Dave Henderson, who had a similar smile, right? And Hindu loved to perform. He loved to play, and he was an awesome broadcaster too. And we had the good fortune of listening to him, and a little bit like Charles Davis, he always just talked with a smile. Hindu, right? He always just had a joy. He had that childlike joy for the game. But I don't remember him. Gosh, I mean, I was so young. But, yeah, to your point, I don't think there's anybody that comes to my mind. Text toy 866-979-3776. Can you think of somebody through your years as a baseball player?
No.
Right? That just interacts and feeds off of the crowd.
And that's why I think I would stop you from saying showman. Not that you're wrong, but I think that sort of
entertainer.
Well, I think he truly performer thinks about the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And that not that he's just looking to entertain them. I think he truly, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of basketball players you could put onto this list of guys that kind of instantly went to what is the crowd's vibe like, and kind of feeding off of it back and forth and looking to them. In my life, I remember Paul Pierce kind of jumping up on a table and looking at the crowd.
Reggie Miller.
And I was thinking about Reggie last night, watching Caitlin Clark run all around. And once you mentioned, God, does she ever get tired? I was like, yeah, that's what Reggie used to look like.
She's not even sweating. How does she not even sweat?
He was the same way. Like, he'd be running off 3,000 screens. You're like, how is he not tired at some point?
Yes.
Julio seems to just think about the fans in a way that I can't ever recall another athlete. Right. And I love it.
Because what is baseball supposed to be, Saul? Because baseball, you're supposed to be so locked in and so focused, right, on every single pitch and every little move and the stance of that hitter and right? I mean, you're supposed to be. But then when you've got traits like he's got, and you can run like he can run, and you can jump like he can jump, guess what you have? You have a freedom to perform that a lot of other guys don't. Mitch Haniger has got to have a focus on that guy at the plate. And he made a couple nice plays yesterday and kind of, you know, showed that he could still run out there, and he's got a nice alarm out there. But Julio's just got an effervescent, like, I'm good. Mm. Oh, shoot. Okay, I was maybe half a beat late. And it doesn't matter. I'll go chase that thing down in ways that very few can.
Ron Artest is not a good answer. How dare you, people? That's not a good answer at all. What's the matter with you guys?
I said this in our show email the other night. Is there anybody that's more equipped for the walk-off than Julio? Like, he celebrates with everybody and has, and we've seen it.
I don't know, Ron.
But is anybody more ready for it than when it's him?
It was amazing. Justin, you're right about that. And finally getting a chance to see him. It was kind of
the whole
Julio package last night.
Living the life of Julio all over the ballpark. A couple great catches, almost another one, on the bases, a little adventure tonight, kind of running through the stop sign late. But Julio does one thing. He makes it exciting, and he always plays hard. So we can make adjustments on that.
Yes, you can. And you hear that from every coach, no matter the sport. I mean, I'll live with full speed mistakes. I'll live with them. Hopefully we don't repeat it. Hopefully we're not a repeater, right? Hopefully it could be one time and then we'll fix it and whatever. But I will live with full speed physical mistakes way more than I could live with a mental mistake. Mm-hmm. Way more than Robbie Cano getting picked off at third, just falling asleep. Like way, way more than that. Like if, when you're going full speed and you believe, no. That guy out in left field's got no arm, noodle arm. But unfortunately, Manny's seeing the whole picture in front of him, and whether it was late or not, like, come on, man. You know, also, at some point, you got to trust some of those people around you and not just all of that God-given
ability. Well, it's funny. He ran through a stop sign in spring training, and it worked out. He ended up scoring on the play. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that kind of emboldened him or something, but, yeah, that's probably not something that you want to repeat, especially with nobody out and just kind of – there's just no need for it in that spot.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, I'm not going to give him grief about not making the catch in center field that ended up kind of bouncing for a home run. It's a tough play. I mean, is it one you'd like him to make?
Wonder what the percentages were. Justin, you said afterwards that his catch, his sliding catch.
The sliding catch was actually a harder percentage chance of that
15%?
Being out. 15% compared to 25% for the catch of the wall.
Okay.
The one that
what
he made.
What about the one he didn't make?
I don't think I got to see that one. Hmm.
That would be interesting to know kind of what the percentage was on that. Yeah, Brock, you're right. That looked to be maybe even an easier play than the one he made.
Felt easier than those other two.
But that ball was twisting and
it was.
Slicing
it was.
And it's right at the wall like that. You ever jumped up near a wall and tried to make a catch?
All the time.
Seriously. Have you ever done it?
Dude, I do parkour every day. That's what I do.
You've
not seen me jump off walls?
I've not seen you.
Have
you ever tried to do that?
You know, Perry Hill's got that wall, and then on the other side of it, during breaks, I'm over there doing parkour.
All right, so it sounds
stuff.
Like the answer is no. All I'll tell you is it's significantly harder than it looks.
Yes.
Those guys make an incredibly difficult athletic play that requires timing, a physical grace and dexterity, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Anytime they do it, I'm impressed. I really am. It is and it also takes some courage. Like the whole thing is really impressive.
No jokes aside, I remember one time looking at the wall and thinking, how did Bo Jackson run up that wall?
Right.
How is that physically, like as a human? Like I can understand how a cat does it, right? In those kind of reflexes. How did Bo Jackson, like you go back and watch all of Bo Jackson's feats, and there were a lot of them. He did some of them in the Kingdom, in fact, throwing Harold Reynolds out and running over Bosworth up the tunnel. But when he ran up the wall, like just think about how, it's just superhuman. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those... Yeah, and I don't do parkour.
No?
You're right.
Yeah. You don't seem like a parkour guy. Sometimes maybe you could call it that when you're on your mountain bike and you go flying over
the
handles.
Funny, which
you've done like three times just in the last year or so.
Brock, you gotta stop doing that. This is not a plug, but it is. The ironic thing is that they're advertising the next Griffey bobblehead night, which is the night where he's making a home run robbing catch over the wall in the Kingdom.
Oh, wow.
So it's like... Julio makes the catch. Advertising goes up for the next series of the Griffey
game. Of course
game.
It does.
Like, yeah, baseball's just got a way of having its own little fate like that.
That is true. All right. Well, it was fun last night. Great to see Julio doing that. There are some other parts of the game that I would like to come back to, and it was I thought that was an important win for the Mariners. Not that, an April fifth game of the season is going to determine your fate, but I thought it just kind of clarified some things that were issues for them in the first four, and it was nice to just see the offense come alive a little bit yesterday. So we'll come back to them, I promise. Up next, we'll give you guys everything you need to know before Jeff Passan joins us at 8:30. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Nice win for the Mariners yesterday. Bit of a bounce back after a tough one on Sunday. They get back over 500. They do it by scoring five runs. Most they've scored in any game this season. Three of them coming off the bat of Dominic Canzone.
Allen at third. Tie the runner at first. The pitch. Swinging a fly ball deep into the gap in left center field. Freeman going back to the warning track to the wall. Goodbye, baseball. Dom Canzone with his first home run of the 2024 season, a three-run shot into the pen the other way, and the Mariners now lead the Guardians 4-0. Number one for Dom Canzone.
Yeah, that was nice to see, and it was good getting Mitch Garver back out there as well. He started that rally with a walk. In fact, the Mariners took six walks in that game. Brock, I know I sound like a broken record, but I really do think it's so important. You can strike out, but not if you don't walk. Yeah. And the 45 strikeouts, not ideal.
Nope.
But the 6 walks in the first 4 games can't happen. And they struck out 9 more times last night. They walked 6. And when you can do that, you can do so many. It allows you to force the pitcher to just stop throwing you spin the whole time.
Yes, it's called traffic. It's called pressurizing that opponent, something that we've heard for 8 years, be hard to play against, make it difficult. When that guy is just in rhythm, right, as those Red Sox pitchers were over the weekend, and just, no cure in the world, don't got much on the base pass, can throw all this spin, I'm in control, I'm in charge, there's a zero, there's a zero, there's a zero. Yeah, a little different when you get traffic on the bases and you got kind of popping that. Hopefully he's a confidence builder for Canzone. A rough start in his first 8 at-bats. Half of them were strikeouts. That time he got a ball out over the plate, and he knew what to do with
it. He certainly did. Struck out 2 times, though, unfortunately, after that. Meanwhile, pretty decent start for Emerson Hancock.
Starts with pitching with us, and really excited for Emerson Hancock. That's his first major league win tonight, and he earned it against a team that's been swinging the bat really well. I thought he just established he's going to attack the strike zone right from the get-go and really trust his stuff, and really happy for him. Again, you look at his spring training, I thought he had a really good camp, but wasn't really projected to make our team, and injury happens, and he steps in and does exactly what we need him to do. Just attack with your stuff, and he's going to only continue to get better.
It's a heavy base behind Scott right there. I kind of like that.
It shows you they're really, really celebrating a huge April win. Some other good news on the injury front. Let's see, Santos, a clean MRI. Brash starting to throw his slider, which is good news. Here's Justin Hollander on Brian Wu.
Brian Wu played catch today. Felt good. He was down for a little over a week from throwing, so he'll have to build back up. But as we felt at the time and continue to feel, it's not a long-term thing. We'll see how fast it goes and when he starts ramping up more and throwing off a mound. But right now feels good, and we'll continue to ramp up.
That is really, really good news, hearing that he is starting to play catch and hopefully back sooner rather than later.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
What an incredible experience it was watching that game yesterday afternoon. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, all of the other characters that have really become household names. Just so impressive what has happened with the women's game. Clark delivered in every way. 41 points, 12 assists, 7 boards, 9 threes. Half of them seemed to come from just over half court. She was really, really awesome. And she takes her Iowa team through a very difficult bracket all the way back to the Final Four.
This one probably feels a little bit better. It's my senior year with this group. A lot of people counted us out at the beginning of the year with the people we lost, and all we did was work really hard, and to get back here is really hard. This region was loaded with so much talent, and the job's not finished.
Job isn't finished. Can I hear Kim Mulkey cut number 9 here as well?
Absolutely.
I love this. Kim Mulkey has seen everything in basketball. She's won multiple national championships. She's seen all the stars over the years. She's battled with the great Gino Auriemma. She battled with Pat Summitt. She's seen it all. This is pretty high praise when asked, what exactly did she whisper in Caitlin's ear in the handshake line?
What did I say to her? I said, I sure am glad you're leaving. I said, girl, you something else. Never seen anything like it.
Neither have I.
It's hard to take her seriously, even though I know she's a great coach. Just for some reason, just something about her makes it sort of hard to take her.
Can you imagine if her and Jimbo Fisher were married?
No.
Woo.
No, I don't think I can. I think maybe I would not want to either, but... she basically attacked Caitlin
Jimbo.
Clark in the line.
Like, what, Kim? Jimbo!
Screaming at each other back and forth with their thick accents. What a night. Seriously, I don't want to take away. It was an awesome, awesome game. And Caitlin Clark was ridiculous. UConn got 28 from Paige Becker as they advanced past the USC. So Friday night, 2 great games. South Carolina, NC State will be first. South Carolina probably going to win that one, that's for sure. And then we'll get Iowa and UConn. How about that? That should be a blast on Friday.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Mora was just dumbfounded by the Jimbo Kim Mulkey.
As she should have been.
Yes. Yeah. Mind blown.
She'll never recover from having to have seen that or heard it. Let's see. Oh, Shane Wright was back last night, Brock, yeah. Which was awesome. Here's what they told him before the game.
They said they're looking forward to playing with me, and you know, want me to just go and play, go and skate, use my speed, use my young legs, as they said. So, yeah, no, they said just go and enjoy it, go and have fun, and go and just play hockey.
Well, I really like what they did and how they handled it. They didn't just send him out there to play hockey. They sent him out there to play with two of the most reliable veterans on the team. I don't think it's an accident that he was sitting there playing between Jordan Eberle and Jaden Schwartz. It paid off. He had a goal. But more than that, he looked much more physical than I remember him when he's been up in the past, more confident. Mm-hmm. And more than anything, he went to the front of the net. And if you want to succeed in the NHL, you've got to be willing to pay the price. He seemed able to do that.
Well,
last night.
I don't think it's a surprise. The season flatlined a bit, and that trajectory after an amazing playoff run a year ago is kind of flatlined because he and Beniers just haven't been awesome. Mm. They've just not taken that step. Nice to see both of them score last night, and hopefully over the final eight games of this year, of which Shane will play, what, five of them? He had a six-game kind of total. Hopefully the two of those guys can start to make their name against a whole lot lesser competition here down the stretch.
All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. Yeah, you've kind of become a Clayton guy, looking at the schedule all the time. I appreciate that about
well
you.
With hockey, yeah, kind of looking at the schedule. In hockey, I got a fun little profile, by the way, in 30 minutes.
Oh,
got
yeah?
another one of my favorite programs. And, yeah, we're coming. I think this is number 15 or so.
Utah today?
Yeah, we're going to go Utah today. And, yep, we're kind of coming down to, 3 weeks from Thursday, right? And it just feels like these weeks with Mariners baseball every single night and everything just kind of speeds up. And remember, the fellas can get together on Monday. So starting on Monday, those Seahawks can start to work out a couple weeks earlier than they have in the past with the new regime in place.
Sort of hard to imagine that's already going to be happening. All right, that's in 30 minutes. Brock's draft profile. Before we do it, Jeff Passan will join us next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio, weekday 6 to 10
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Hold on a second. This can't be true. This can't be right.
What?
Well, I mean, we have a standing date with Jeff Passan, Tuesdays at 8:30. Now I'm being told that Jeff's not going to be on until 9 because he double booked.
He what?
What?
It's he only what? The second one. Give him a little time to get used to it again.
Does that mean he's got to sing?
You mean the second year of doing it at this time? What do you mean?
Does that mean he's got to sing a song?
He wants to sing.
Yeah, I know. That
he's
would be
sing
a punishment.
A song. Yeah, let's make him sing a song.
The punishment for Jeff would be not allowing him to sing, which is all he wants to do is come on the show and sing something for us. We'll actually have to make him talk about baseball. So, no, we'll do Jeff at 9 o'clock. So we're happy to push that back, which means Brock's draft profile will be here in about 15 minutes. A couple quick thoughts on the Mariners, but I also wanted to play this for you, Brock, and then we'll do some football here as well. Have you heard anything going on with Shohei? Like, it feels like that story was so big, right? And now everyone's sort of in wait and see mode, and it just kind of has gone away a little bit. I'm sure.
Kind of how everything seems to work.
Right.
It seems like there is just this headline that you think is just going to shake and rattle and roll for weeks on end. It can be the biggest story. And then, well, here comes the next biggest story, and it's Caitlin Clark. And then here comes the next biggest story. Do you know that a guy last night threw a no hitter? Yet again, I mean, from Houston.
Yeah, I don't even really know who that is.
Blanco, first time he's ever thrown more than six innings. He barely made the roster.
No hitter after.
Oh no! By the way, that NC State team. Do you realize had they not made? I was looking at some highlights yesterday. They were down three. They were down three. NC State was to Virginia in the ACC semifinal. All the dude had to do for Virginia is make a free throw, and they're done. It's over. He misses. Guy drives down, hits a 40-footer, banks it in to go to overtime, and now they're an 11 seed in the Final Four.
So crazy.
Stories.
Well, this one has sort of not gone anywhere over the course of the last week. I'm sure it's because everyone's sort of waiting for information to come out, and it will pick back up again. But I thought this was interesting. This is Joe Maddon, who was on with, I believe it was Jason Stark and somebody else, talking through his his thoughts on it. Remember, he was Shohei's manager for, what, 2.5 years or so in Anaheim. He was asked whether he believes it could have gone down the way Shohei says.
That's not a stretch for me. The part that's somewhat of a stretch is the fact that it would get by Nez somehow. You know, those kind of transactions would not, the agency would not be aware of that. That's the only part that's incongruent with all of this. But easily that Shohei would rely on ePay to handle like daily bill paying, whether it was via Venmo or PayPal or a check. Who knows? I don't even know. So that to me is not a reach by any means. The part that I don't quite understand is be like the fact that, especially when you talked about those numbers, if they are accurate, that the agency would not have known about that too.
So I think that's actually pretty interesting that he is, because that feels very open and honest and not CYA at all, or covering for your guy or anything like that. He's saying, look, it is possible, when I've kind of said the same thing, that a baseball player like him has allowed a close confidant access to his funds. That's not that
surprising. Here's my bank account. Here's my wire account. I'm sure he's transferred funds. Now, $4 million.
It's a lot of money.
You would think is,
I mean, not obviously.
Yes, that's a lot of money. But the first part of it is not that surprising. Not at all.
He mentions Nez. That's Nez. I think it's Bolello is the way it's pronounced. And he is one of the super agents. That's his agent, Shohei's agent from CAA. And it's an interesting observation from somebody who really understands the way the modern game is, saying, yeah, I don't think CAA wouldn't be aware of that. They're such a big agency, and they have, you know, accountants, and they just have their hands in everything. Yep. It seems that part is a little odd.
Yep, I would agree with that. The front part of that, I think I told you that when that story broke, did not surprise me.
Right.
That these guys just do not sometimes have handles of millions of dollars. Like, yeah, okay, just take care of that, or you take care of that, or I'm going to focus on hitting and doing my job. And, I mean, we watch Ichiro, right? We watch him still at 50 years old there down in Peoria, like, just as a robot through his day, going through all of that routine. And, like, yeah, you just, you know, you handle the rest of that for me. Do I think that he had his bank account? Yes. Do I think he had wire account numbers? Yes. Like Joe Madden, where it feels incongruent is that is a large, large, large sum of money that the agents and the accountants and the handlers above his buddy would want to take a little look at that, I would think.
All right. Well, I'm sure this story will come back in vogue at some point. It's a little quiet right now, but I'm sure it will be back at some point before you know it. And we can certainly ask Jeff for an update when we talk to him now at 9 o'clock. It was a nice win for the Mariners yesterday. And I do just want to focus again, because we spent a lot of time, like everybody did yesterday, concerned about their offense, right? And understandably, it had been, you know, coming off of the year previous where the offense was such a challenge for them. At least that's the way the narrative was. At the very least, you could say it was inconsistent. And, you know, all of the progress supposedly made to eliminate the strikeout. And what happens? They come out and strike out 45 times in 4 games. I understand why people were concerned. I just, you know, Brock, I think patience is more important than contact. And so that wasn't going to go away for me just because they made some changes to wanting to get a little bit more contact. Did it work? We'll see. Right. I mean, they definitely got players on their team that make more contact over the course of their career. But you got to do more than that. You got to find ways on base. And generally that means you got to take your walks. If the other team is throwing you spin, well, you have to make them stop by not swinging at it. And finally, last night, they were able to do that.
Yeah, I think you've been very, very consistent about that. That if, you know, the strikeouts don't bother you as much as they do me. And you know, last night I would say to you, like, hey, man, look at when even you put the ball in play, that defense still has to respond. And Cleveland made an error and you get the bases low. Like, you know, just put the ball in play. Put the ball in play. Put some pressure on. And I think you would say, well, if you're not putting the ball in play, then you have to. You have to walk. And when they were not doing that over the first 4 games, what did we see? One run. Pitchers in great rhythm. It's kind of like not getting to a quarterback. And you let that guy just sit back there and be very, very comfortable versus, you know what, all of a sudden it's, you know, second and long. Or all of a sudden you pressurize. Or all of a sudden you hit them and you just put a little pressure. And you felt the Cleveland guy for the first time, maybe of any starter they faced so far this year, feel a little bit of that pressure. He left one out there, and old Canzone knew what to do with it.
You know, the 6 walks tonight, Haney took a walk, Julio got a walk. I mean, that's what it's going to take. You got to stay with it night after night, and it helps having Mitch Garver in there. You know, he started all that rally today with a walk. You know, he's going to swing at the right pitches. So we got to get better there. We know that. And we're five games into the season. We have a lot of baseball yet ahead of us, but good signs tonight.
Yeah, I'm just Scott and I probably on the same side. Same page on all of that.
You would have liked this. So the Iowa game ended, and we were watching the Mariners, and it was after Julio got thrown out, mm-hmm. and it was first and second. Then with one out, I believe Garver was next up, and first pitch was just like this slider that came in, spin, came right back over the middle of the plate, and I was like, oh, and Ted's like, no, you don't swing at that. It's first pitch at the bat. Mm-hmm. You're not swinging. You're not swinging at a slider.
First pitch slider.
Yeah, swinging at first. Yeah, what happens if he pops out? If you're gonna be all mad again? Like, no, man, let that one go and really focus on your pitch. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of what we hear and certainly have heard. What are your swing decisions? Right. What is control the zone really all about? What is patience to you really all about? Man, swing at your pitch. Swing it, you make the decision, and you'll hear, gosh, Blowers is so good up in that booth, man. He is so keen on that and has such a great feel for it. And I think even right before that home run with Canzone, it's like, hey, he gets a fastball. You know, like just they know. Those guys get one, maybe two. And when you get that pitch, you better be on it. You mm-hmm. better make the right decision, right? That processing and that swing decision, such a vital, vital part of offense in a sport that is so doggone yeah. hard to hit.
Well, nice to see them come away with the win there last night. All right, Brock, we'll do your draft profile coming up here in, let's call it 5-6 minutes or so. I also wanted to play you some other sound that I kind of ran through earlier and just kind of talking through where Penix is going to end up. Here was Eric Edholm on yesterday with Bump and Stacy.
The injury history is probably the biggest thing. You'd be hard pressed to find an evaluator out there who said, this Penix kid doesn't have the arm or doesn't have the talent to play in this league. I don't believe that's ever been the issue. I can remember hearing about him as an NFL prospect at Indiana prior to him even transferring. So NFL people have been on this guy for a while, but two season-ending shoulder injuries, two ACL injuries, you know, that's as red flags get. But he's done so much to challenge people, like the idea of how much does past injury history matter?
That's right.
What else can he do?
Yeah, nothing. There's nothing he could do. He started, what, every game for 2 years?
Right.
He took him to the mountaintop. He was 14-0.
He had his doctor show up and tell everybody that he was healthy. Like, what else is this guy supposed to do? I feel like he's still being punished for something that happened 3 years ago.
Well, but when you've got multiple, right? If this was one ACL, Salk, and this was one shoulder, not a problem. Not a problem. There would be no red flag. It would be, you know, they like those ocean current conditions, right? They have the red flag and the orange and the different conditions. It would be orange. But when you've got multiple ACLs and you have now multiple shoulder injuries, that starts to grow the concern, as Eric said, right, there, the right word, projecting.
So let me ask you this question then. If you were an NFL GM, which would you prefer? A quarterback that is injury prone and might get hurt and mm-hmm. never be the player you want him to be, or a player at quarterback that might be bad, that might not be good?
Mm-hmm.
Because NFL teams seem to have no problems drafting those guys at quarterback every year in the first round.
About 80% bust rate.
Guys with major, mm-hmm. major red flags when it comes to how good they are at playing quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Yet an injury is like past is such a potential is such a difference maker for them. I'm not sure. I think I would rather have a player never play again because of injury than be bad.
Yeah.
The bad player holds you back for years.
But the bad is probably also likely due, and that bust rate is 80% Salk because, well, kind of like in blackjack, are you a bad blackjack player? Or do you sometimes get dealt a hand that is just can't win with,
mm-hmm.
right? You go to some of these organizations with bad coaches and bad players and bad scheme and don't put you in a position.
Yeah.
And right. I mean, there is that side of it as well.
I don't think that's the Zach Wilson problem. I don't think that's the Trey Lance problem. I don't think that was the Christian Ponder problem or the Jake Locker problem. I mean, we can go mm-hmm. forever with these guys that ended up being drafted in the first round, the Blaine Gabbert problem. Like maybe it was, maybe it didn't help. But I feel like these guys are so consumed. Like, I'd rather have the guy who gets hurt than the guy who stinks.
Yeah, but what if the guy that gets hurt also does stink at this level because he just can't perform? I think they would say to you, I'd rather have the guy that at least I can get out there and play and evaluate and see versus the one that just can't play, that I get just nothing out of my investment, right? That I get no return on investment.
Yeah, but at least you can get out of that investment faster. Like, okay, well, he's hurt. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do here. He's just not going to be able to play for us versus, well, let's give him another shot. And maybe if we do this, and maybe if we change the coordinator, and maybe if we change that. That's a franchise killer for years.
Yeah, Klatt, you're going to hear Klatt talk about this over the next couple weeks, and he already has on a podcast, so I'm not sharing information that he's sitting on, but he is 100% right. And this is so up your alley, Salk. When I say this, you're going to be like, yeah, do that. Oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. Of course you do this. Klatt's like, you know where Michael Penix should go and where he would absolutely thrive?
The Rams.
And where his skill set and his quick release and his unbelievable arm combined with a coordinator and a head coach and personnel where he would just absolutely thrive tomorrow? Miami. Mm. He's like, you put him in Miami in that RPO system where he is slinging the ball to Tyreek Hill and slinging the ball to Jaylen Waddle and throwing them open and making throws that Tua absolutely cannot make.
Right.
He can do everything Tua can make as a left-hander and make these quick reads. He's got quick hands and he's got quick reaction and he can just sling it right out of there. And then he's got what Tua doesn't have, which is an unbelievable arm then to stretch the field.
Well, I think it's nice that that you credit Joel with that. I mean, he did say it, I guess, on a podcast. I feel like
I was trying to figure out if either of you remembered. He said it when he was
here.
On with us.
Yeah.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. No big deal. Said it on our show.
Did he really?
And that's fine. Yeah.
But I can't get Miami out of my mind. Like, I just think he would fit so perfectly in Miami. They could get away from all of the RPO stuff that they have to do to fit Tua.
Good argument.
Really leverage the defense down the field.
I feel like I said it better. I felt like I was.
I don't know if I would say that.
I know. You know what I hear in Klatt? I know, Joel.
What?
Right there, that was a little tentative. He did it with us first
to
kind of get a little teaser out there. What did Brock and Salk think of this? What did Brock and
Salk?
And by the way,
he must think really highly of us.
By the way, you texted him, huh? You let
Joel?
Me know. That, yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, Joel said, hey, did you give Salk my number?
Stop. Like, I've had Joel's number forever.
I said, no, I didn't give him my number. He's like, he's texting me now.
Stop it.
This guy's texting me.
Stop. Get out of here.
I'm dead. How did I know that? That's exactly what he said to me on the car ride to the airport.
That I texted him, but not that you just recently gave
him.
He's
like, bro, you can't give him my number.
Oh, stop. That is enough. That is enough out of you. That is ridiculous. I do not appreciate it.
He's soft.
You're lying to the people.
I am not lying. Well, he does love you, by the way.
What is wrong with you?
I'm not lying to the people. He did ask me about that, and he's like, no, I love it, man. He and I are having fun back and forth. I love jumping on with you guys, and I know him. He soft played that with you and I, so then he went to his own podcast, and now he said the Tua people are killing him. He's like, I don't even know if I can keep doing this.
Tua-non. It's a big thing.
Oh, the Tua-non people are mad?
Yes.
Yeah,
the Tua-non are really unhappy with him.
Well, all right. Brock, good conversation there. Jeff Passan coming up in 15 minutes, which is why we're going to do your draft profile a few minutes early today.
The Seattle Seahawks select.
This is Brock Heward's draft profile.
You want traits? Check. You want a vocal leader? Check.
At the end of the day, you have to say, okay, what's best for the organization?
Can you make people around you better? And can you bring people together?
Every day at 9 a.m. leading up to the draft.
Well, I know I did not preview this guy yet. I may have forgotten that sound from Joel a couple weeks ago with us, but I will not forget the impact that Sione Vaki has made on me over the last couple years. I have had Utah a bunch. I had Utah against USC in the game at night that was one of my favorites ever in Salt Lake City. I had USC and Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. I had USC-Utah repeat this year down in the Coliseum that really knocked and ended Caleb Williams' Heisman hopes and everything else. And in every one of those games, there was this safety that I just could not shake. And that safety was Sione Vaki. And actually, I remember sitting in the title game. And USC jumped up on Utah in that title game down in Vegas. And Jason Benetti turned to me during one of the breaks and he said, we could be in trouble. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, this is a two-score game. USC scores and goes up three scores, as one-dimensional as Utah is, as a run team, like we're in trouble. So fortunately, Sione Vaki on a fourth down where Lincoln Riley targets an inexperienced first-year starter. He targets with his elite slot receiver, Sione Vaki. And what does he do? makes a play, bats the ball down. Utah goes down and scores. That game turns on its head. That was a crucial, crucial play. Fast forward to this year and watch the 5'11", 210-pounder. And he won just a great safety with 51 tackles and 8.5 tackles for loss and 3 sacks, Salk. When Utah got so depleted at running back and they lost player after player after player, Kyle Whittingham went into Andy Ludwig's office and said, okay, we're going to do what we did 10 years ago here. They had a safety, and I think Justin Barnes remembers this guy. His name was Eric Weddle. And when Utah was in the same position all those years ago, they took Eric Weddle and moved him from safety to running back, and he played both. And they did the exact same thing this year with Sione Vaki. And it was about midseason. He started 2 or 3 games at running back. He ran for over 317 yards. He had a 73-yard touchdown run. He caught 11 balls out of the backfield, ran a wheel route for a 50-yard passing touchdown. Why? Why did Kyle Whittingham turn to Sione Vaki? Because that dude is a flat-out baller. I could put him at running back and he could play. I could put him at safety and he could play. When he was in high school, he was a 1,500-yard slot receiver out of Southern California, is an elite ball skill slot receiver. He went on a 2-year mission. He returned. And when he returned, well, he was a little bigger, stronger, and faster. At the combine, he ran 4.62. Pretty good time. By the way, Weddle at the combine ran 4.56. Same size. Sione Vaki was 5'11", 210. Eric Weddle was 5'10", 5'11", 203. So almost the same exact size. Almost the same speed. The difference? Vaki jumped 39.5 inches. Weddle 33.5. 39.5. Kind of like my guy yesterday, Ben Sinnott, who jumped 40 inches, Salk. When you watch somebody do that in person, you're like, okay, that dude's just different. There's a different level of explosiveness. He also repped 225 20 times, something Weddle could only do 11. So there are some drawbacks. He has really short arms. He's got real small hands. And, you know, he's got to be really tight in coverage because he's not super long and doesn't have super long arms. But he's just one of these guys that I come across every year in college football. And I'm like, this guy just knows how to play. And he's probably going to be a 5th-round pick. So once again, when we talk about over the course of these first 6-7 guys I profiled, Salk, they've not been first rounders. We'll get to that here as we get closer to the draft. These have been guys in the 3rd or the 4th or the 5th. And as Klatt said in the car ride with me the other day, man, there's a lot of starters in this draft, in those rounds. And Sione Vaki in the right spot. I don't know if he is a day one starter. He's a day one special teamer. He may be a day one returner. He may be the versatile guy you want on the roster, on the back end of your roster. And then, oh, by the way, when he plays safety, he's just got an instincts and he's got a hitting power that is unique. So Sione Vaki is a guy in those mid to late rounds. If his name comes off the board in the 4th or the 5th round for the Seahawks, sign me up as being pretty excited.
All right, there you go. That is another draft profile from Brock, just guys he likes. So he projects, I mean, he's a secondary guy.
Yep.
Safety.
Yep, he's safety. A safety. Yep, and you've got 3 of them, but you don't have one quite this explosive. You don't have one quite this powerful. Now, you know, he's, as I said, he's not particularly long. And this is so different for me. And you know, we've heard about length and arm length, and we've certainly talked about it at tackle for a long time, Salk. It's funny how that has trickled down into these receivers and DBs as well. But it makes sense. Like, if you got short arms, think about you've got to now be a step stickier to these guys. And how hard is it to cover in this league? Really hard when you can't put your hands on them and you can't have some of the contact, mm-hmm. and they're as fast and quick and twitchy as they are in the NFL. So I get it. It feels like nitpicking that he's got such short arms, but you know what? That's a step. You know, that's 12, 18 inches that, you know what? We know the difference when you catch a football in the NFL. We know the difference between a window that, you know, is 1 foot or 2 foot open versus 6 inches open. It's different. And those little details do matter. So he's gonna fall in this draft because of it. 4.62 is good. It's not elite. It's not great. I'm going to actually profile his partner on the back end of that defense that I think will be a 3rd-round safety that also is really, really intriguing to me. But, man, just a football player, and I love those guys, and so does John Schneider.
Yeah. Did you see any of – I know we talked a little bit about it earlier, but Matt Miller, who's going to join us tomorrow morning, basically at this time, 8:30 tomorrow, kind of going through his version of looking at the draft and saying, okay, how many first-round picks are there?
Yep.
How many actual, like, second-round grades are there? How many 3rd-round grades are there? It's an interesting way of looking at the draft and maybe helpful for a team like the Seahawks who like to move up and down the board to help you determine how many picks you actually want to make in each draft.
That's what they've been doing for 15 years.
Right. I mean,
that's what John has been doing. That's where he is, you know, made hay. That's where, you know, those second and third and fourth round picks, and certainly early, and it feels like the last couple of years kind of getting back to some of that sweet spot. That's what they do, man. They put them in those groupings. Right, Schneider even said that to Bob and Dave the other day, talking about the interior offensive linemen. Okay, so we got Laken Tomlinson, we got Cody Whitehair, and likely, you know, one of these guys could sign in the next, you know, week or 2 weeks or whatever leading up to this draft. So there's that, those two vets.
Mm-hmm.
How do they compare with these guys? How do they compare with Zach Zinter and some of these other guards that we do like in this draft? And you know, and then where will they go? And how many other teams need them? And how do you then project? And I mean, it just... But what you can't do is in those middle rounds go, okay, I'm only taking this guy. And I've heard this. I've heard this from coaches. You know, they'll go to the running back coach, say, okay, here's three guys. You like them all? You know, or four guys. You know, do you got a say in any of them? Or you know, or would you be fine with any of these four guys drafted in the third, fourth, or fifth round? Right? I think you also start to formulate those conversations leading up to it. So as calm as that war room is, and we've heard that for years, mm-hmm. as businesslike as it is, so these hours, these weeks leading up to it, and all the projections and all the debates and all the, as John said, all the time that he and Pete, you know, worked through these guys leading into those decisions on that draft day.
Yeah.
Hayes in the barn once you get to the war room.
Interesting this year, not knowing what Mike McDonald really wants and what it's going to, you know, what his team looks like and what a yep. Mike McDonald player is. We yep. have hints. We have, you
what
know,
about
previous
Ryan
history.
What about an offensive coordinator that's never done at the end of level
a defensive coordinator that we don't know anything about. I mean, like, it is going to be fascinating. And yep. John, for the first time without Pete's influence, should make for very educational draft, if nothing else. All right, quick break. Jeff Passan apparently double booked, so I'm sure I can't wait to hear what was more important than us. I hope it was like some station in a random city. It's like, oh, sorry, man. I promised the guys in Duluth. Like, it's time for me to go on with them. So
on with Pat McAfee.
Is that what it was?
No.
It probably was. If I'd be willing to bet that's what it was. We'll be right back with Jeff Passan, Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.